All righty. Well, today is May 22nd, 2018, and we are in Strong From Within, the module around Inside Out. And so I actually pulled out my book and have a prayer ready, and this is called To the Glory of God. I breathe in. I breathe out. I allow my breathing to deepen and my eyes to see more fully. Everywhere I look, I see the glory of God. I breathe in. I breathe out. I allow my breathing to deepen again and my eyes to see beyond whatever my mind thinks I see. Everywhere I look, I see the glory of God. I breathe in. I breathe out. I allow my breathing to deepen yet again and my entire being to know the glory of God. I breathe in. I breathe out. Breathing as the glory of God.
That was nice.
Thank you. I've gotten away from reading out of this because we've read out of it so much, and I barely remember that this is in here, much less writing it. it's like really delightful. I've been reading all of this stuff about being Christ incarnate, which I feel pretty far away from most of the time. And it's like, oh yeah, remember, like, that is our possible capacity. So I like this reminder.
Yeah, I feel like I just heard that for the first time, and I know I've heard it before. And read it.
Right, exactly. That's so funny. I think, too, as we develop, you know, in our own journey, then we're at a different place, like different things would strike us, whereas before, you know, they'd make no impression or little impression or whatever.
So yeah, you're not at that point to take things.
Yeah. I keep threatening to just publish a book that's strictly poems and prayers, and that darn thing would be published by now because, you know, it's writing all the other stuff that takes time and focus and whatnot. What's that?
You could do both.
I could do both, right? And I could get this one done now, which Activator loves. So, I don't know. That kind of just sparked again. But we digress. Today we are talking about Inside Out. And we have pure joy, pure brilliance, thinking causes feeling, before thinking, out of our head, into our life. Less mess, present and curious, and be here now. Which one would you like to start on?
I was just looking through them because there was something that struck me the other day when I was listening to them.
Okay.
And I can't remember what it was now.
Oh, boy.
I think it was about the thinking causes feeling.
Okay, let's go look and see what that says. Shall we read it out loud to see if that sparks anything for you? Okay. Do you want to read or you want me to read?
No, I can.
Great.
Thinking causes feeling. We are living in the feeling of our thinking, not the feeling of the world. Michael Neal, The Inside Out Revolution. We tend to think we feel insecure, anxious, afraid, sad, or happy because of what's happening in our life. When we slow down and really look at our experience, we see that our thoughts about what's happening in our life create the feelings, not the circumstances of our life. I don't know why this, I know I've read this book, and this kind of just totally hit me totally different, I think. because I know I say I think all the time, and we know I know we've been through that before.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, yeah, we say we feel that way, but I don't know. It's just weird that we think we feel that way.
What do you mean? Give me an example.
I was just going to, like one of your examples, I lose 5 pounds and I feel happy. When I notice my thinking, it may sound like, finally, I'm making some progress. I'll look so much better in that new outfit. Now men will pay more attention to me. So it's like, instead of just feeling better, that our body is 5 pounds lighter.
Mm-hmm.
We put all this meaning on that,
yeah,
5 pounds we lost. And how we put so much meaning on everything that we think up in our head.
Right? Exactly. That's exactly the point. And generally, you read one that is seemingly positive, but now all of a sudden, what if men don't pay more attention to me? Right? And so,
yeah,
if you look at the one above where the colleague gets promoted and I feel insecure and my thinking sounds like it should have been me, why can't I get ahead? What does she have that I don't? I never get promoted. What's wrong with me? I mean, you just go on and on and on and on. And it's like, all that happened was she got promoted, right?
Yeah.
All that happened was 5 pounds. Come on. Ephraim?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you all?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm mm-hmm. glad you're here.
Me too.
So we're talking about day 16 right now, thinking causes feeling, if you want to look at that.
I don't have a computer with me at the moment. Can you read it? Or
yes, Janet was reading it, and then we got to talking about it. So, Janet, do you want to go through all of the examples, or do you want to pick up where you left off?
We could do that. I'll just, the quote at the beginning is, we're living in the feeling of our thinking, not the feeling of the world. And it's by Michael Neal at the Inside Out Revolution book. And so the examples were, my colleague receives a promotion and I feel insecure. When I notice my thinking, it may sound like, it should have been me. Why can't I get ahead? What does she have that I don't? Or the next one is, I lose 5 pounds and I feel happy. When I notice my thinking, it may sound like, finally, I'm making some progress. I'll look so much better in that new outfit. Now men will pay more attention to me. And then the next one is, once it begins to, oh, no, that's the two, I guess.
Yes, that's not an example, but go ahead.
It says, once it begins to soak into our being that our thoughts create our feelings, we begin to understand that our life is created from the inside out rather than the outside in. Which then begs the question, if we don't want to be at the mercy of our thoughts, what else is inside of us that could create our experience? To experiencing beyond thinking, our thinking, to source before our thinking.
Hmm.
And one of the things I, back to one about losing 5 pounds, that we've put all this meaning on to losing the 5 pounds and what's going to happen and all this stuff is going to be amazing, instead of just being happy that, oh, my body feels better, I lost 5 pounds.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
Or, you know, when somebody else gets some promotion, we make it all about us instead of about them.
Well, and like there's a fact. The fact is the promotion went to that person, not to me. But what do we know about what that really means? And typically we tend to go to a very negative place, you know, all the things that must be wrong with me, why I didn't get the promotion. And I just finished up with a client before we got on this call who has had some major, major stuff in her life that's causing grief, like four different things. And then she's mad at herself for being sad and for isolating. And so there's the things that have happened. The four things have happened. Those are facts. But then it's shocking, all the talk that goes along with it. And I asked her you guys will appreciate this. She has three strategic thinking strengths in her top five. So I said, what percentage of your suffering do you think is from the events, and what do you think is from the thoughts? And she thought about that a long time and said, probably most of it. So I just thought that was fascinating, that we don't recognize we're heaping on the suffering with all this thinking. And I think the trick, maybe particularly for strategic thinking folks, is not even trying to stop it, because I don't know if you guys have had any success stopping that kind of thinking, but I haven't really. But I have had some success saying, oh, yeah, those are just thoughts. They're just thoughts passing by, just like right now there's a storm outside and clouds are passing by. So not taking it so seriously, like really do I have to go to that place of what's wrong with me that I didn't get the promotion? So I know I just said a lot. Thoughts, responses, ideas.
You know, it seems like it's a nice concept to be able to detach the thoughts or to realize that the thoughts are what cause the suffering. And it doesn't necessarily change the thoughts. I mean, even if you're conscious and you're like, oh, look, there I am in my pattern again, thinking these thoughts. And and then what do you do? I suppose you can continue to, even in recognizing it and knowing that it's causing your suffering, it's still not necessarily the end of the thoughts or the end of the suffering.
Indeed. I've just noticed for me, I've been really practicing this probably for, 6 or 8 years now, so who knows? When there was a tipping point, if there was a tipping point. But I pretty much can now not exactly reduce suffering on command, but that whole thing of detaching, oh yeah, those are just thoughts. And of course making the distinction between regurgitated repetitive thoughts, this kind of thought, and inspired thought, which is the best of strategic thinking strengths, right? So when strategic thinking strengths are operating well, we're not causing our own suffering. So it's not all thought, which is interesting, but there's this repetitive regurgitated thought, and you know, that's one of the ways we know. It's like we've told ourselves a variation of this 100 times before, 100,000 times before. So it doesn't always work, Ephraim, but it's shocking to me how if I can catch myself and say, oh, whoa, there goes that whole thought thing, I can just not take it so seriously, and it does lift, maybe not all of the suffering, but a lot of it. And I don't imagine that had happened the first time I had that brilliant idea.
Right.
I think sometimes it's just kind of like when you kind of learn to meditate and you're just supposed to watch the things go by and not like attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a little bit more like sometimes you can catch yourself going like, if you get in like a really crappy, like bad thought loop or something, all of a sudden you can go, oh, that isn't really true, and I don't really have to worry about that anymore. I mean, it kind of, this is kind of a little teeny bit of a relief.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't catch myself doing that all the time either. But, you know, maybe every 20,000 thought I can do that.
Plenty of room for progress.
But to me, it just makes it, because sometimes I get, you know, you get a loop going and you can't get out of it.
Yeah.
I don't think I can do that all the time, for sure.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that thought won't come back either, but.
Indeed.
To me, it, they kind of, when I think about it, I think about, like, you know, when you have, like, a dream, you can't, you know, I know I'm dreaming, and I'm like, crap. And so I even get up and go to the bathroom or something, and then the dream will just start all over again. I hate that. But it, that's kind of, like, to me, how I picture, like, weird loops in your brain get going, and you can't get them stopped.
Right.
And you don't have to take them so seriously. Oh, look, there's that dream again. Oh, look, there's that entire thought loop again. It does something by becoming the observer rather than the consumer of the thoughts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. It's, I mean, sometimes I can feel myself shift into observer mode, even if it's like just a second. And it's almost like there's a little bit of relief there, even if I can only stay there for a second.
Yeah. Well, and that tells you something. If you can stay there for a second, that means there's the opportunity to do more. Maybe not in that moment, but it's like, aha, there's a break in the chain.
Yeah.
So why don't we read the one after that? That was 16, so the next one is called Before Thinking. And I know, Ephraim, you said you don't have access to them. Janet, do you have access to that one, or do you want me to read it?
I can read it if you want.
All righty, go ahead.
Instead of paying so much attention to what we are thinking, let's look at the fact that we are thinking. We are not our thoughts. We exist before and beyond our thoughts. Where were we before thinking? Where are we beyond thinking? We were, are, and always will be the spark, be a spark of the source of all, of one mind, in the consciousness of one mind, impersonal. And at the same time, in our own personal consciousness, accessing thought beyond impersonal thought from one mind through one consciousness and personal thought through personal consciousness. Take a deep breath and feel into this place of pure peace, pure well-being, pure oneness, one mind. To experience beyond our thinking, to source before our thinking.
So how does that inform this?
It's really confusing to me.
Okay. I noticed a couple typos while you were reading. I'm like, well, that doesn't help. Jeez. Who's in charge of this operation?
I'm trying to take the breath.
You're taking the breath?
I'm trying to take the breath. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's like it's like in the breath, you can kind of let go of the thoughts. And I can still kind of feel them in my body.
Interesting.
Particularly for a strategic thinker, right?
Right. So, before we were in this form, this incarnation, this lifetime, we were in whatever this primordial soup is. I don't know how useful that is to everyday existence. So I think that might be why it's confusing to you, Janet. It's almost like accessing that place is a really good day in meditation. Just getting to that place of calm without, I don't know if I've ever experienced the thoughts still being in my body like you're saying, Ephraim, so I don't know exactly what to say about that. Do you have a sense of it?
Well, I kind of always believe that let's see, thoughts and emotions have kind of a body imprint too. And so when I fall out of my thoughts, the emotion is still there in my body, kind of.
Okay. So let's look at this. I'm reading a book by David Hawkins, the guy who measured all the different feelings and gave them consciousness numbers. Are you guys familiar with that Power versus Source book?
Yeah.
I'm not.
So basically, Janet, he used muscle testing, and shame tested at the lowest. It tested at 20, and pure Christ consciousness tested 1,000. But for purposes of people on Earth, I think love tests at 540. And courage tests at 200, and he determined that that was the tipping point from lower energy negative emotions to 200 being courage. And after that, I don't know what it was, maybe peace was before love, but that the whole world consciousness is hovering right around 200, and that's why we're in such a state of flux, you know, the Aquarian age to the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. And so anyway, I'm reading a different book. It's not that book. It's a book called Letting Go, Surrendering to What Is, or something like that. And what he has you do with the lower emotions, if you'll stay with them and feel them, but as much as you can, move away from the thought, like you were talking about, Ephraim. So maybe you're having a lot of fear because you don't know what's going to happen in the future, and you're, you know, on that thought loop around all of the catastrophic things that could happen in the future. As much as you can, you let go of that, and you notice in your body, what does it feel like? And you might even talk to yourself out loud saying, oh, there's a clenching in my jaw. And you're not trying to change them just yet. You're just bearing witness to them. And so after that, you feel some more and you say, oh, yeah, my stomach's really tight. Oh, that jaw thing, I can really feel that more in the right side. Oh, and there's something in my temples, kind of a constriction in my temples. Like that, and that if you stay with it long enough and just keep paying attention to the sensation, his premise, I guess, is that like all of our addiction is in an effort to get away from those uncomfortable feelings. And so we go into whatever our habit or addiction is instead of just feeling the feelings. And if we just stay with the feelings and feel it and keep noticing what the sensations are, mostly we realize it's intolerable. I've done it a few times where I get really agitated and I'm like, oh, I see why I want to drink now. I haven't actually gotten up to drink, but I stay with it. And then it does mercifully pass. And he said, every time if you stay with it, when it shifts, it will shift up. You'll feel lighter. And I notice usually I have one of those heavy sighs that you can fake, but that's not the point. You know, the heavy sigh comes when there's basically a release for me. And it's really interesting then, like it automatically raises my level of, you know, I would measure differently then. I would no longer measure at the fear level because I've stayed with it all the way through. So that's certainly beyond the scope of what we're talking about here, but you were right there with what you were talking about, Ephraim. So I thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. I've been experimenting with it a lot and find it really phenomenal. I've never done any kind of practice like this. I've never heard of anything like this. And it just seems so simple and makes so much sense. And the sitting with the discomfort of what the sensations actually are seems so minor compared to all of that avoiding.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that I've had it work that way for me before. And then I've had a couple of times where the sensations are so deep and big and intense that it just doesn't break or lift.
I've not had that experience, so I don't have anything helpful to say about that. What did you do in those circumstances?
I think add a little movement on top of it to get him get things going can sometimes help.
Gotcha. So it's almost like you're physically moving it out of your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
It's like doing the shaking from Koya.
There you go, shaking, yes. Love shaking. Thank you, Janet. I forgot about shaking. I do some of the Koya videos, but I forgot about how great shaking is.
Well, and I love the part where she talks about, like, when you shake things off, you're, like, getting all that, like the crappy energy off of you, but then the earth takes that and makes compost, basically.
Yeah.
So that's always a good picture for me, that I'm shaking off the icky energy and it's making stuff grow other places.
Rich compost for great growth. Love that. What were you saying,
yeah.
Ephraim?
I always like that image, too, of compost. I've heard of shaking, but not of Koya.
If you're interested at all, as thinking people are prone to be, just go to YouTube and type in Koya, Q-O-Y-A, and she has tons of videos. Like if you were interested particularly in shaking, you could look at that one, but she has many for different reasons, different, you know, she'll make one when it's auspicious time of the moon or holiday, or I don't know, how else would you describe it, Janet?
I mean, a lot of it is around like the new moon or the full moon or different things. It's more of a feminine based. I think she learned a lot of it in South America somewhere. But it's really awesome, and it makes you feel really good when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movement practice?
Yeah.
Yes, and it is. Probably the reason you haven't heard of it is she does gear it to women because it's, what is it, wise, wild, and free? Is that the thing?
Yes.
Okay.
I should.
And so the thing I love, love, love the most about it, Ephraim, is she's adamant. It's not like postures or routines. It's like you move your body in whatever way feels good. So she'll suggest things, you know, like now shake your hips or you know, rotate your ankles, but she constantly is coming back to in whatever way feels good for your body, you know, do what feels good for your body. And so now do free movement and do anything that opens you up, helps you feel great in your body. It's just really a lovely practice. And I'm shocked every time I do it, like I can do 3 minutes of it and just I feel like I'm born again. And then I can forget about it for 6 months.
Yeah, wow. Me too.
Seriously? Being human is sometimes so dense.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. When
so anyway.
Was staying with me one time in the last 6 months, sometime we were doing it, getting up and doing it in the mornings, and it makes you feel so great. And then one day we just stopped and we haven't done it again.
And that was back in 1982. I heard you say 6 months ago, but that's crazy. Like, what's up with that? So I'm certain that she doesn't exclude men, Ephraim. So you just check it out and see if it speaks to you.
Okay.
So anything else about this one, or if you guys are up for it, I'd like to share one more.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it? Yeah. I want to go to day 19, which is called Less Mess, because it's one of the ones that has really changed my life, particularly in relationship to other people. Janet, do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
Why don't you read it?
All right. So this quote is from the book, The Relationship Handbook by George Pransky. People generally handle emotions in one of two ways. They indulge their emotions and ride an uncomfortable roller coaster. They run away from them and become distracted and hardened. There is a third alternative. Realize that emotions are only thoughts. Our emotions reflect the quality of our thoughts, not the quality of our experience or the quality of the world. We tend to think that we're mad, stressed, scared, upset, insecure, sad, or anxious because of a situation, or because of someone's behavior, or because of our own behavior. When we realize our emotions are caused by our thoughts, we don't need to take them so seriously. We can simply give them some space and gracefully allow them to complete. And in the meantime, refrain from making too many decisions or engaging in too many conversation. That way, we have far fewer messes to clean up. To taking our emotions less seriously. So, both of you guys know the Enneagram a bit?
Only a little.
Okay. Janet? Oh, Janet! All right,
oh,
well.
I was on mute, sorry, I forgot.
Having a whole conversation, no problem. Do you know the Enneagram?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. So I will just tell you the teeny Reader's Digest version about me. I'm a 4, and of all the nine types, we take our emotions the most seriously. And when I first realized that that really was quite damaging and started looking at it like this, oh my gosh, just the idea that just because I have all these thoughts, I don't need to share them all, and particularly when they're really low mood thoughts, like I can't tell you how many hundreds of arguments I could have avoided with previous husbands, boyfriends, my sisters, friends, because I thought it was imperative to share all this stuff, you know, that I wasn't being true to me if I didn't share all this. And what I realized when I came across all of this inside-out thinking and all of these authors talking about it in the different areas of our life is that me, you know, the whole me doesn't care one way or the other about the thoughts or the emotions, and that sharing all that, it's sort of just like, I'm riled up, so now I'm going to get you riled up. Why would I do that? That is like horrible strategy. And it's still kind of odd, but if I'm in a low mood now, I'll just say to whomever, you know, I'm in a low mood. It would probably be better if we didn't talk about this right now. And oh my gosh, that has been so freeing. And I have I've had the same coach for myself for like 3.5 years now, and he came across this inside-out way of thinking, I think 25 or 35 years ago. So he's lived a lot of his adult life with this. And he was on the brink of a divorce when he realized he already knew this stuff but wasn't practicing it. So him and his wife went to a guy, well, actually, George Pransky, the guy who wrote this book, and sat down and said, you know, we've got all this stuff, and, you know, we've got to talk about it all. And George just helped them see that that probably wasn't the best way. And now him and Lori hardly ever fight because they just know that it's low-mood thinking and it'll pass. And if there's still something to work out, they'll work it out, but not in a low mood. So that's my, you know, I feel like I'm a poster child spokesperson for this. And I don't do it perfectly, but I'd say I've changed 85%. You know, like I just realized that indulging all my emotions and sharing them with anyone who's in the vicinity, it's pretty much a recipe for hardship. And why would I do that? So there, I will step off my soapbox now.
So what happens with your voice? I mean, the things that need to be said. You wait for a high mood?
Yeah. Yeah, because then there's a whole different way they come out. It's not about shutting down or repressing. It's just about being able to do it from a place that, you know, if there's something that has to be worked out, then great, let's work it out. But it's interesting when you say what happens to your voice, many times it just becomes less important. Like when I'm in a better mood, it's like, oh, I don't need to share that with anybody. Hmm. Like it just floats off on that cloud with that thought. It's shocking to me. And being in a whole room full of people who have been in this environment for a while, they seem kind of, I don't know, like monks or something, pretty subdued and quiet. And I'm not that kind of person by nature and probably never will be. But I do get the value of, like, if something needs to have a voice, give it to my journal. And then it's all there. So when I'm in a higher mood, if there's still something to share with my sweetie or my sister or a client, then I will, but it'll be from a place of there's something that needs to be worked out here rather than just a place of blasting or a place of throwing up on them or, you know, whatever it is that happens without the ability to come from a more centered place. Did that answer your question or bring up more questions, Ephraim?
I think it answered it.
Okay.
So you're getting it out of your body kind of already just by journaling it or whatever, so it's not like it's stuck there.
No, and Koya, again, is a great thing for that, and you brought that up, the doing something with your body makes sense, because if it feels like you've let go of the thought, Ephraim, but the emotion's still there, yeah, I totally get that you don't necessarily want that there. So then there's a physical practice that can take care of that, and if you want the words out or the emotions out, then the page is there. So it's definitely not about squelching your voice. It's just about not fighting so much, really, you know?
Yeah.
And when did fighting ever produce something really amazing? Now, maybe a hard conversation could produce something amazing. I'm not saying that you never have a hard conversation, but there's a big difference. I think probably most of us know the difference between something that's just guaranteed to be a big fight or something that's going to be tough and there might be some tension, but, you know, it needs to be talked about.
Right. It's true.
So, anything else about this before we close today?
I don't know. I was just thinking about this. I hadn't really, you know, I always say that, like, when you, like, hold your emotions in, it kind of can cause, I think that's what causes lots of our health problems.
Yes, absolutely.
But I never put to the point that that's the thoughts that are causing the emotions that are causing that.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's a good connection.
Yeah.
So I always talk about people who I know who have cancer, and like they're very angry, it seems like, and I don't know if they're angry because they have cancer or if they have cancer because they're angry.
Right? Well, and anger has thoughts with it, right? And they have their particular pile of probably regurgitated, repetitive thoughts. And the thoughts have a pattern, you know, like I'm going to say most, but I'll bet you it's all. As humans, all of us have certain patterns, certain core wounding, certain things that we always go to, whether it's I'm not worthy, or I'm unlovable, or no one wants to spend time with me, or everyone leaves me, you know, on and on and on, right? Whatever that is. And so there's sort of the core wounding pattern slash seed thought, but then there's the bajillion thoughts that could spring from that, right? And
yeah,
you have enough of that going on, then you do have a physical ailment.
Yes.
Right.
So to me, I think it kind of speaks toward, I don't know, I'm just paying much more attention to I am not this body, I am not this mind. Like, I am an unlimited being that is spirit in pure form, and I'm here in this body, in this experience, with these emotions, with these thoughts, with this pattern. But it seems like lately I've been able to be more in the part of, oh yeah, the body is like a costume I put on, and I am not my body, like taking it much less seriously. And so then there isn't even a lot of emotion that's stirred up around that because I just don't take it as seriously as I used to. So it's not like repressing anything or not giving voice to something. It's like I don't have those thoughts to give voice to anymore. And not all the time, of course, but a lot of the time.
Huh.
Well, that's hopeful.
Yeah.
It is hopeful.
I'm in the process of filing bankruptcy right now, and that's not something I'm sharing publicly. And it's also the third time I have filed twice before in my life. So that's pretty clear that's a pattern, and it's a pretty humbling, discouraging pattern. And I just went through the mountain of paperwork that it takes to file bankruptcy. And I thought it was going to take 20 or 30 hours, and it ended up taking 10 and a half, which stunned me. But what was even more shocking was I realized I didn't suffer this time. Last time, I had to have a friend come and help me. I just was in so much judgment and pain and overwhelm. And this time, I just did it like it was some kind of bizarre meditation that I had to do. And didn't even really realize until I was done. Like, first of all, I was surprised it was done so quickly. And then I'm like, huh, where's the suffering part? And so I think that's been a particularly big eye-opener for me of something that has so much emotion that could be attached to it and so many thoughts. And I had a lot of those thoughts 6 months ago when I saw it heading in this direction because of a couple of big financial mistakes I'd made. And so it's not that I've had no suffering, but the actual filing of the bankruptcy, almost none. And that seems downright miraculous to me.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I know.
That is amazing. But, yeah, I can see how it, like, we're as attached to it. So.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's a fact here. The fact is I'm declaring bankruptcy, and I put almost no additional thoughts to it, which then caused no additional suffering. And I thought the actual paperwork would cause suffering because it's such a pain in the ass. And it's like, no, this is just what you have to do to complete this process. So just keep doing it. Just think of it like your taxes. Don't need to put in a bunch of additional thought on it. So that gave me a pretty visceral experience of, wow, I've really shifted with this. And didn't even know, it wasn't even a goal to get through it without suffering. And then I did. It's like, I don't want to waste any more time on this being a problem. So that's my weird inspirational story that I didn't know I was going to tell you.
Yay.
I like it as a girly. It's really inspirational, though, because it's like if you could go through stuff like that without the suffering, it's... Think of all the other things you can go through without suffering so much.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. That's kind of what I'm opening my eyes to.
Yeah. And to me, it's kind of like in, you know, Kundalini, where they want you to be in the neutral mind, so nothing is good and nothing is super, uber good and something's super, uber bad. So it's kind of like... Yeah, you're kind of detached from your emotions, sort of, in some way. Not that I want to be detached from my emotions completely, because I think that sounds horrible, but...
Yeah, and I agree. But there is something about, I don't know, not letting them run the show or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's close, and we're not meeting next week because it's the fifth Tuesday of the month, and then we're back again June 5 and in a new, what do we call it, module, I guess, and that's about creating a new script. So I took your suggestion from last time, Ephraim, about actually reading from my own book, and we had an opening one, and the closing one that I turned to is the super short one that's one of my favorites in the whole book, and it's called Flourishing. Joined mind, open heart, strong body, radiant spirit. So, thank you both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Have a good night.
All righty. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.